The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but
we
because they are hard.
To start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting for 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to the Friday morning California time space show program. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you for tuning in. A couple of real quick announcements. Our guest today, which has a dual personality, is with us only for 1 hour. And that is because he recently moved from Wisconsin to Hollywood, and he's more discombobulated than ever, having entered Hollywood and founding all the stars there. So, and since he writes about space and stars, I mean, he's right at home, but it's taken a lot out of Victor Norgaard. So he's only with us for 1 hour today. And then on Sunday, don't forget Dennis Wingo interviews Dr. Space, and that show gets underway at 12 noon California time. So for today, if you want to talk to Victor Norgaard or his alternate personality, Dr. John Brandenburg, you are welcome to use 1-866-687-7223. And you can email Victor or John at drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And you can also post a comment or ask a question via our blog, which is thespaceshow.com. All the way over to the far right and look for upcoming shows. And this program is the first one listed. It features Dr. Brandenburg. And open it up. That is our blog and archive page for this show. And you can post your comment down at the bottom, just like a normal blog comment. So the toll-free line is our preferred way. And let me give it out one more time. 1-866-687-7223. And then email drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And do remember that we have a very detailed website newsletter on our website. It's center right on our homepage. It is updated after the Sunday Space Show program, but it does have all of the information about the week's programming. And then if you scroll down, it shows you who we have planned and for what date, and we're booking into the latter part now of the third quarter of 2018. We do request suggestions for guests, and the best way to do that is to tell me who you're suggesting and why. And if you have their email contact information or anything like that, please send it along. It would be super helpful for us to get in touch with the person to invite them to the Space Show program. Do note that on our website, again, thespaceshow.com, everything is archived. You can listen off of our site or quickly download the show. There's a store in the upper left menu under support. And then there is Listen Live. Please share this information with others. This tells you how to listen to live Space Show programs, compressed MP3 archive programs on our website, and also the podcasting versions on the different podcasting servers like iTunes, as well as Alexa with TuneIn. And then the most important of everything on the website is about supporting the Space Show. Please remember, we're a listener-driven and financed program. We can't do the Space Show without your financial support. So if you like what we do, you like our guests, you like our programming, then please do support us. And we are a 501c3 nonprofit, which means that if you are a U.S. federal taxpayer, you get a tax deduction for your gift to the Space Show / One Giant Leap Foundation. And if you're a California taxpayer, as Victor Norgaard and John Brandenburg now are, they get a tax deduction gift as well because California has us as a public benefit corporation for the state. If you have any questions about any of this, check out OneGiantLeapFoundation.org, our parent, or just email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. We also do have sponsors, and they have banner ads running across our homepage. You can change that banner ad as often as you like. And normally on a full-length program, I would read the sponsor messages, but on the shorter-length program, such as today, I simply thank our sponsors because without their support, we would not be doing the space show. So Northrop Grumman is one such terrific sponsor. So is the Space Development Network. Check them out at spacedevelopment.org. The National Space Society, NSS.org. The Space Foundation, which is spacefoundation.org. And their symposium website, spacesymposium.org. We thank them as well for all of their great support. The Integrated Space Plan, they too are a terrific sponsor. You can find out all about them at their website, thespaceplan.com. AIAA, which is the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, is our sponsor. And they're one of my favorites, as you know. And Celestis, the pioneer provider of Memorial Spaceflight Services, is also our sponsor at Celestis, CELESTIS.com. So for those of you that listen frequently to the Space Show program, you're very familiar with Dr. Brandenburg, who discusses his physics on the show, his work with Mars and about Mars, and also his science fiction work, which he does under the pen name Victor Norgaard, N-O-R-G-A-R-D-E. In fact, if you wanted to buy his book on Amazon, for example, if you searched under Brandenburg, I don't think you would find it. So you would have to search under the pen name Victor Norgaard, N-O-R-G-A-R-D-E. And John is with us today specifically to talk about his latest in the UFO trilogy war book series, and of course it's the final because the war is over, and we'll find out about that in just a few minutes. The full name of the final book in the trilogy, Morning Star Rising, UFO Armageddon, The Day of Life or Death Has Come, and this is book three, the final series of Morning Star UFO trilogy. The other ones he wrote were Morning Star Past, The Collapse of the UFO Cover-Up. I believe that was the first one. And then he wrote Asteroid 2020, Sepulveda. Actually, I'm not pronouncing that right. Sepulveda. Yeah, I guess I am. Sepulveda. And he's won awards for his books and his science fiction. He does not yet have a star on the Walk of Fame on the Hollywood sidewalk, but now that he is a Hollywood resident, we expect that to be installed about 2 a.m. one night in the near future. Victor, welcome back to the space show. And,
thank you very much.
You know, there is a shortage of concrete, I understand, so make sure you're fully prepared for that midnight installation on that Walk of Fame.
Well, things have been busy in Chicago. A lot of people needed overshoes lately.
True.
The concrete is, but anyway, I just wanted to mention the first book of the trilogy is, you know, Morning Star Past, The Collapse of the UFO Cover-Up. The second book is called To Rule the Night.
Okay.
The UFO War. And its subtitle is Not in Kansas Anymore. In other words, the human race is not in Kansas anymore. We are hell and gone from Kansas. And the third book is Morning Star Rising.
You need to update your bio for me then, because I'm taking this from your bio. So I'm going to send you
update it. The book, Asteroid 20-2012 photo, is kind of the prequel to the trilogy.
Okay.
How the two women got famous and kind of got on the list of people the government could turn to if they wanted to leak something.
So you actually have four books. It's not a trilogy.
Yeah, I have four novels now.
Okay.
And so now the premise of the trilogy is that, and by the way, this represents a consensus now in the UFO field, And, of course, Victor Norgaard is, I'm a science fiction writer, so I say, what if? What if? Okay, the people know that the people have been claimed to have been abducted by aliens. We don't know whether that's true or not. But let's just say, what if it was true, and that they aliens appear to be, you know, they're raping people and sexually molesting them, and taking sperm samples and things, and they're supposedly breeding a hybrid race of little gray aliens mixed with humans. And people were very puzzled by this. And but the consensus that is now formed is that they've transferred the human immune system to these hybrids so that these hybrids are now suitable for colonizing the Earth. In other words, this whole effort is thinly disguised attempted genocide against the human race. Now, once you finally realize that, that is their goal in a what-if scenario, then you end up with a collision of interests that is astronomical. The human race is forced into a fight-or-flight situation, and since flight is impossible, the human race must fight. And I made this a complicated universe. The solar system is in the center of kind of a neutral zone where no one claims it. And so many races can visit here, but this one race, the little gray aliens, the short guys, are here. And they are basically attempting through terror and psychological warfare to take over the Earth. You ask, why wouldn't they just arrive with a big space fleet? Well, there are other powers around that nobody wants a war in the neutral zone, the surrounding powers. So I made it a complicated universe. Also, the little gray aliens, their ships and themselves, they're not bulletproof. They're basically like the great white hunter stepping out of his boat on the distant shore, claiming, I am the great white hunter, I am invisible, invincible, and if the local natives actually shoot him full of arrows, they will discover that he actually bleeds and dies like anyone else. But if he has enough presence, they won't do that. See what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you study Sun Tzu, The Art of War, the best way to win a war is not without any fighting. To give them razzle-dazzle and convince the enemy that resistance is futile, they just surrender. And that's basically what the little gray aliens are trying to do. Incidentally, by the way, they are actually working for somebody else called the Samar, who are very much like, in fact, they are basically human beings. We are part Samar as a prehistory. So I have this in the first novel, the group that was supposed to deal with the little gray aliens, and we had a secret treaty with them, they went rogue and started working for the aliens. Then that was destroyed. In fact, they attempted a coup d'etat when the UFO cover-up ended. So then in the second novel, the human race basically invaded the moon. With the 1st and 2nd Marine Divisions, 82nd Airborne, 101st, they landed in Oceanus Procellarum. The Russians landed a week later, a place called Sinus Iridum, which was interesting because I put that in the novel, and then the Chinese actually landed there with their own little rover. It's called Bay of Rainbows, so it's a neat name. It's up in the northern part of Mars. So now the... what's happening is there's a ground war on the moon. And then the final chapter, this final book, the two women, their correspondents, and they go up to the moon in their tight, clingy spacesuits to look at the war that they started. And one of the interesting things, they end up going up to the front line and see just how horrible it is to fight on the moon in spacesuits and, you know, how what a brutal, horrific experience it is. And then they ride back on this maglev train full of wounded from this battle, and they're helping carrying bedpans and stuff. They're helping the nurses finally they get back to the rear area, and there's this bar, and they walk into the bar, and there were the same nurses on the train. And the nurses invite them over to join them for a few drinks, a pitcher of beer. And everything's fine until one of the nurses says, well, what do you think of the war you started? Are you happy with it?
Yeah.
And this ends up the two women getting a brawl with a bunch of nurses at this table. And in fact, there's MPs come in and break it up, and the two groups of women are screaming obscenities at each other and both blaming each other for starting the fight. And the Cassandra and Pamela finally are walking out of the bar, hanging on to each other. Pamela has a black eye. And Pamela says to Cassandra, she says, now we can truly say we've done everything. And they both learned Taekwondo, by the way, so they actually did very well in this brawl. But that's the feeling that people have, that some people blame them for starting this war. One of the nurses says, why didn't you just leave the UFO cover-up alone? Just let it slide.
And what do they say to that? How do they respond?
Well, they just said, we're just like people reporting a hurricane coming, and then it came, and you're blaming us for the hurricane that we, you know, saw coming. We didn't have any choice. We had to report what we saw. And so they said, you know, we're as aware of the human suffering in this as everybody. And so they then I go from there, from the human military operations on the moon, to the larger struggle in the surrounding stars where there are other races who are dealing with. This was supposed to be, the little gray aliens were supposed to achieve a quiet little knife murder in an alley. And this has turned into a gun battle in the street. The surrounding stellar powers are increasingly concerned that they're going to get sucked into this war at Earth. And the Samar, who hired the little gray aliens, they're sort of, I realize they're sort of the Klingons from the early Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
And they send a warlord to Mars, to the moon, the far side, to ask the little gray aliens, well, how is everything going? You know, your reports keep saying everything is going well, everything is going well. And then we've heard that things are not going well. And the gray alien, chief gray alien, on the far side of the moon, tells the warlord, this kind of Klingon, he says, there have been a few difficulties and we need more money. So I have the politics between other species becoming more and more prominent, as basically this is like a war in the Middle East on Earth, drawing more and more powers into it, in some cases kicking and screaming. This one group of aliens who actually looks quite human just says, their leader says about the human race, why don't they just die and save us all a lot of trouble? You know, but the human race refuses to die. So this turns into a mounting interstellar crisis. Especially as the Russians and the Americans and the British and their allies advance finally on the big lunar base on the far side of the moon at Mare Moskovan, which is the big gray base. And the little gray aliens spent so many of their ships flying to Earth to abduct people, dismember them, and dump their bodies over the cities to induce terror. You know, they keep saying, you know, we're going to do these terrifying things until you surrender. And they keep losing ships doing this. And so they've actually depleted their supply of ships very badly. Also, the humans figure out that since the anti-gravity drives on the ships use intense magnetism, they put magneto proximity fuses in all their anti-aircraft shells. So they just fill the sky with anti-aircraft shells and enough of them blow up near the alien ships that the alien ships come back to the moon all full of holes and, you know, and people in, on board who are dead and dying. And so it's turned into a kind of Russian front, basically, experience for the gray alien. The humans are putting up so much of a fight that they were not prepared for this. They were not prepared for a real war. They wanted to come in, terrify the humans into surrendering, and then take over. And they wanted that to be what happened.
It
hasn't happened at all.
You have a caller on hold, by the way, if you want to talk.
Yeah. Put them on.
Okay. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you? Where are you, please?
This is John in Fort Worth.
Oh, UFO,
all right,
John, Fort Worth. Go
talk
for it.
Many a time.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm reading your books. I'm in the second book right after the first battle of the base in Japan, so you know where I am. I'm not ready for the
finish. Oh, yeah, well, the aliens had all these bases, and they just went stealth. You know,
I'm sitting there reading this thing, and the biggest base on Earth turns out to have
been the last one they found. The first battle at the base is an absolute disaster and massacre.
Is
what you would expect when the U.S. military and the Japanese military stage a conventional attack against people who have far superior technology. Just a massacre.
John, do you like his books? Are they good?
They're definitely captivating, so I'm reading it. The issue I'm raising is these aliens seem to be really, really stupid.
Their leader is stupid, as it turns out. And I've been involved in many organizations where, as the old Turkish proverb says, the fish stinks from the head, where you have people of incredible talent, you have incredible facilities, equipment, and all of it is useless because the leadership at the top is an idiot. And and also there's the constraints that the little gray aliens did not want a war here. They just wanted us to just surrender. They said surrender, resistance is futile, and they didn't really come prepared for a plan B if we decided to futilely resist.
Yeah.
And so it's a part of it is that they are resource limited, and but as you could see from the first attack on that big alien base near Mount Fuji, the human race has a really bad day that day.
Yeah, on that particular
really
one,
bad.
Yeah. But overall, we're doing way better than I think we really could do in a scenario like that. I mean,
well, I tried to tie this to what is reported in ufology.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is reported in ufology is a bunch of ships crashing.
Well, that part I do find amazing, all these crashes. I'm kind of wondering what's going on with that.
Some of those crashes were apparently due to Russian and American fighter planes.
Getting
up close to them and just hosing them down with bullets or missiles, and they would catch ships by surprise. And so I'm trying to draw on kind of the folklore of ufology, which had a lot of ships crashing, people getting abducted by aliens and then returned in the wrong clothes.
Well,
one guy
happen,
got abducted,
you know,
and he'd had his tubes tied, you know, so he couldn't produce any vital sperm. Oh, and the aliens got very angry with him and put him off the ship immediately.
But, you know,
because they couldn't get his sperm sample from him.
You know, most of the mythology around UFOs is they got to have absolutely super advanced technology if they can get here from wherever they are. Therefore,
another thing is that they're supremely competent.
Well, but they, you know, the as I'm trying to say, the mythology is that they're super advanced with technology and propulsion and all sorts of things that enable them to get here. So part of the reason why people say, there's a cover-up with UFO is they don't want people to panic because of what Margaret Mead used to say is, you know, that the advanced society gobbles up the yes. lesser advanced one. That's not exactly the way she said it, but that's kind
of the
essence.
That is the worst fear of the human race.
Yeah, so, but you're portraying aliens that couldn't gobble up a centipede. So, why?
Oh, no, they can gobble up a centipede, especially if the centipede just surrenders.
Well, so their tactic is to get
the centipede starts biting them with its venomous jaws,
then they have a problem. So the trick is to get the
animal. Plan A is the humans just surrender.
Yeah, plan A is to intimidate and get the humans to surrender because they don't want them to know that if they go and fight them, they're likely to beat them. Is that?
Well, let's just say that the Samar put more and more pressure on the Greys to, get down there and fight like men. the Greys basically just said, the Samar basically said, look, you agreed to do a job, now you do it. And the Greys, and they said, you send your space, send a big armada, finally. And the Samar finally, I'm not going to do a spoiler, but I'm just going to say that this is what turns into something like a big poker game where finally everyone has to show their cards.
Yeah.
And suddenly the lights go out. And everyone dives for the pile of cash in the middle of the table. You know, the rules supposedly there's a neutral zone and the other great powers aren't supposed to be involved there, and they start charging in.
I don't know, I kind of like the appearance of the freelance diplomat. I thought he was funny.
But you know.
I imagine kind of a Jimmy Carter kind of guy or a Dennis Rodman. He's a little bit better than Dennis Rodman, but he's, or Jesse Jackson would show up sometimes in these situations and, negotiate the release of like American fighter pilots who were captured or something. And I kind of imagine a kind of galactic guy like that, but he is very well-meaning. He sincerely does want to help.
But book three, which you're supposed to be talking about, is supposed to finish the war and move on, right? Post-war, reconstruction.
No, it doesn't. It's not post-war. It's the end. It is the culmination of the war. It's Armageddon, the Battle of Armageddon, basically. The Greys send a big fleet, finally.
Yeah,
and so they send a big fleet. Their base on their big base on the far side of the moon is about to fall. It's under siege, and the Samar tell them you send your fleet, and then they say, and the Samar say, we're going to send some of our own fleet to back you up. You just go in there and do this thing, and they say destroy the Earth, destroy it. Enough of this. And so the Samar, even though they look like us, don't have any compassion for human beings at all, except that they like our women.
They definitely do that.
Well, they saw the warlord going back to the palace, and he's wondering, oh, my God, how am I going to report this fiasco? And so he talks about the women in a big battle. So they send him back to Earth with some gold chains for golden chains for Cassandra and silver chains for Pamela. Bring back the women and destroy the Earth and bring back the two women.
Is this a bit autobiographical, John?
Oh, of course not. I don't know what you're talking about.
Now we know why you write under the name of Victor Norgard. You can do whatever you want.
I can write. I've talked to John Brandenburg about this, and he denies all knowledge of any blonde, beautiful blondes and Asians.
So is there going to be a book four? You keep saying the trilogy is over with.
I am working on a sequel later in time.
So you're gonna
following both women.
So
no, but that the war is over by that point. Well, how can I?
Well,
is the human race destroyed? Is Cassandra and Pamela taken in chains and nothing else back to the palace at on Rigel to be presented to the Emperor of the Samaran Empire? Oh, I don't know.
Well, there is.
Maybe they're there. Maybe they've become baronesses in the Samaran Empire.
But you do have a grand victory parade in New York City, so I don't want to give anything away.
Yes, I do. And the final battles of the war, by the way, are fought on Mars.
And really? What about planet?
Well, because there's a small garrison of Greys there, and I'm giving away all the book, how the book ends. The Greys send their big fleet. And the Samar send their fleet, but the other powers decide that they're enough is enough, that the Samar are violating the neutral zone treaty, and so they send their own forces in. So there's a big battle at Alpha Centauri, in addition to a big battle in the solar system at the end.
So everybody must have advanced technology for propulsion by then, right?
Well, the humans have dramatically increased their technological base.
Pure joke.
Mostly because they've captured so much Gray technology, because the Grays have lost so many ships, and they reverse engineer. I mean, necessity is the mother of invention. The human race is absolutely cornered and has just given infinite resources to its scientists and engineers. It's kind of a fantasy of mine that you get that much resources. But they pull all their best students out of Caltech and MIT and set them loose in the, at Site 51, letting them examine all the stuff. And they do make dramatic advances. Technology. Some of it, the humans invent themselves, and a lot of it they also reverse engineer. So they're absolutely desperate. So they become very creative.
I take it Bob Lazar went to work for them. Is that correct then?
Oh, I don't. I rather not comment on the whole Bob Lazar episode. Victor Norgaard will comment and say it would make an interesting subplot in a science fiction novel.
He's supposed to be the expert on reverse engineering of alien technologies.
The saying is that it's been 80 years since Roswell, and we reverse engineered a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff.
That's right.
By the way, in the Sepulveda, which is the prequel, they actually harness helium-3 fusion, and so they have compact fusion power without any neutron, without any radiation. I mean, and the humans invented it themselves. They didn't get it out of an alien spaceship.
I have an email question for you.
Sure.
Okay. This is Linda in Seattle. And she says, I'm listening to the show. I love science fiction, but I hope your books are more orderly and easy to follow than what you guys are talking about.
Well, it's a complicated situation. The cosmos is a complicated place in my novel. Just imagine what the last year of World War II looked like in Europe. The Russians are taking Poland. The Polish resistance wants to have a free Poland. The Russians don't want that to happen. There's a Warsaw Uprising. It's crushed by the Germans, with the Russians just standing there watching because they don't want an independent Polish government. You've got agreements about who's going to have what at the end of the war. You've got Churchill, FDR, Stalin. It's just imagine how complicated it was And in my cosmos that I invented to have all of this drama occur, it's also equally complicated. You've got all these different factions out in the stars, you know, basically placing bets on whether the human race will survive, and some of them don't want us to survive. They want this whole problem to go away. You know, like that one guy just says, why don't they just die?
So
it's a lot of trouble.
I have another email question for you. Paul is in upstate New York. We've been hearing a lot from him lately. And he says, I take it, given all the warring factions and the different societies or civilizations or species out there, that there really is no Federation of United Planets, correct?
Oh, no, there isn't. There's no Federation.
So that's
Pamela
all
Pamela herself, Pamela is talking to her science editor in the science fiction, the first science fiction novel, and he says, well, I have always imagined that, you know, there would be some kind of galactic police you could call if things got out of hand, and she's an abductee, and she says, there are no police.
No space force.
Or anybody.
No space force to come to your rescue.
No, there's no space force to rescue. Can't call anybody.
John, do you have anything more? Otherwise, I'll free the line.
Well, one thing I want to get in there is that if you thought about, you know, TV movie rights for this, I was thinking it might make something good on the Sci-Fi Channel or maybe one of these Netflix special miniseries.
No, I'm here in Hollywood talking to people. So.
I mean, it would actually work in some of those environments. I mean...
It's a cosmic soap opera, and you've read, you know, like Cassandra recovering and finding out what really happened to her when she was held a prisoner at that alien base, and, you know, all of that.
I'm closing on the end of the second book, getting ready for the third.
All right.
Thank you, John.
I'm proceeding. Well, I'll get off, see if anybody else says something.
By the way, I tie up all the loose ends. So,
Victor, if you do get a Hollywood film contract, just remember all the free airtime I've given you. I want a cameo in the movie. Okay.
I'm sure we can get you.
Get me a cameo. Get me
the ex-boyfriends of Cassandra or Pamela. How about?
Well, that would be even better. But it just a cameo, a walk-on, and they can't leave me on the cutting room floor. So they can't eliminate.
Sort of like J. Allen Hynek
right.
Close Encounters.
Yeah, or maybe if somebody's walking their dog and the aliens attack, I can be walking Pepper. And the aliens attack me and my husky. That'd be a good cameo.
I have stuff like that happen. You know, they shoot down this one UFO is hovering over a neighborhood in Baltimore, and they basically blast it with missiles and electromagnetic pulse.
Yeah.
And it crashes right in the suburbs. It crashes, you know, and the person they're trying to abduct gets killed. And a bunch of other people get killed, and that, you know, the hero is there with his army rangers, and his buddy just says to him, don't feel bad, she's better off dead.
Are you happy with the way the third book came out and how you brought this to a conclusion?
Yes, I am. I may actually put out a second edition where I extend some of the battle scenes. I've gotten very favorable comments on it. One person, though, complained that I needed to make the battle scene longer and bloodier.
Well, this is already a nearly 400-page book, so if you extend the battle, well, it's over 400 pages, you'd be pushing many, many hundreds of pages more.
Anyway, it's just an idea.
So what is the role of the U.S. President and Congress during all of this UFO skirmishing and fighting?
Oh, when the attempted coup d'etat occurs in Washington, D.C., and thousands of people get killed, there are tank battles on the Mall between the secret government forces that run the UFO cover-up and are allied with the aliens and the legitimate government of the United States, they declare war, and the president, they elect a president from out of the Senate to be, they install a new president. So they're very active doing everything. In fact, both women get to visit the White House a lot. Part of it is the president needs somebody to talk to who knows what's really going on. Many of his advisors have never dealt with the aliens, and both Pamela and Cassandra have, especially after Cassandra gets rescued from this alien base. And so he basically uses them as sounding boards.
Interesting. Does the United Nations play a role or help bring it about to an end?
Well, it's basically the Security Council, the rest of the nations. Finally, you've got forces on the moon, and there are a bunch of international kind of battalions, but mostly it's the standard people who are the superpowers up on the moon.
Another short email for you from Randy in Tucson. And he says, I've not read any of your books yet. I'm thinking about it. I assume I should read them in
order. I think you should think about it a few more years.
He says, I think I should probably read them in order. I'm wondering if all of this UFO fighting and trying to survive the human race finally unites the people of Earth together, or are we still
in each other's
throat?
The human race actually does, in my novel, the human race actually functions fairly well in a united front. None of the superpowers decide to ally themselves with the Greys, for instance, and fight against the others. They all form a unified. The Grey aliens are so alien. You know, they're more closely related to cockroaches than they are to humans, and. So they're the sort of enemy that would easily unite the human race.
Are the alien abduction stories validated because of what is discovered with the UFO wars, or is that all nonsense?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Pamela, as you discover from reading the first novel, Pamela the Blonde discovers, in investigating the UFO cover-up, that she is an abductee. She's been an abductee since she was 15 years old. And it's devastating to her. It also explains to her why her life has been kind of so screwed up. But she gets over it. She sees soldiers on. Neither of these, none of the characters in my novels are super people. I mean, the women are not super women. The hero is not Superman. They are just human beings with their own personal traumas and wounds, and they charge into battle with bandages on, basically.
So I don't want to give away I don't want to give anything away for people who may go up and read it. Does Earth, how do I do this without giving it away? What I want to ask you is,
imagine what the United States was like before World War II started and how it was at the end of World War II.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of how the human race is. We start in a little town in Kansas, kind of mentally and technologically, and by the end of when the Gray fleet arrives, main battle fleet arrives, we are a space power. Not a big one, but we are absolutely a space power. And We have a reputation for fighting like demons and having contempt for death. And the human race faces extermination if it doesn't win. It has to win.
Failure is not an option, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a victory or death. And so, and this is in keeping with a consensus that is now formed that the whole abduction phenomenon, the hybrid alien phenomenon, is an attempt to colonize the Earth and exterminate, and it's genocide. The gray aliens are plotting genocide against the human race, and this is an emerging consensus in the UFO field. We're dealing with a potential genocide situation, and we have to react accordingly. There are other species out there in UFO lore that are to view us with very benign curiosity, but the grays are they're the MS-13 of the galaxy, apparently.
So, what is the Earth like when it's all over with?
Oh, it's pretty much the same way it is now, except we're now the human race is the space power. When the main alien battle fleet arrives, we have our own fleet to face it out by the moon.
So we
part of the problem the aliens have is they don't know whether to they have to rescue the base on the moon first before they can destroy the Earth with nuclear weapons. They just want to turn the Earth into a blue cinder, but they can't do that. Their big base on the moon is besieged by the Russians and the Americans and all the other allies, and so they have to try and rescue their big base first. Before they can do it, so it's a complicated situation for the grays. The humans, it's very simple. We just have to defeat the main battle fleet and chase them out of here.
And they end up.
But it is the alternative to victory is genocide of the human race. So we have no choice. We have no choice in anything.
Okay. And, of course, obviously, Earth being defiant prevails. I mean, I guess that's giving away the ending, but it doesn't tell you how
it does. I don't know what happens in the end. I've forgotten.
we don't have to provide any details for that.
Let's just say when the gray battle fleet arrives, they face an allied human fleet near the L1 Lagrange point on the far side of the moon. It's L2, I think. Not sure. Anyways, Lagrange point.
Roger in Denver wants to know if we take prisoners of war.
Oh, yes. The humans... part of the problem is the gray aliens have a warrior caste called Tomandaz, and they murder a lot of their fellow aliens trying to surrender finally. They're like the Waffen-SS towards the end of World War II. You know, anyone trying in the regular German army trying to surrender is denounced as a traitor and hung. If you watch the movie Fury. And the Russians have fought with the Greys in Siberia on Earth, and they're Russian. they have very powerful feelings about the Greys by the end of the book. By the end of the trilogy. So, it depends on which the two women finally go to the Russian front against the aliens, and they're asking one Russian officer who's giving them, you know, is escorting them around, and Cassandra asks the Russian officer, she says, well, we've heard reports that your troops have committed many atrocities against aliens they have captured, and the Russian shrugs and says, well, these people, whoever's spreading these rumors, obviously is anti-Russian. And he says, but I will tell you, he says, if our general staff does not hear that our troops are committing atrocities against the Greys, we consider they are insufficiently motivated.
You have another email from John Hunt in Fort Worth, who has emailed rather than called. And by the way, listeners, there's still time if you want to give us a call. And that is 1-866-687-7223. Did I get that right? Yeah, 7223. John says, we couldn't have an outcome where the aliens win. That would be too depressing.
Oh, some people can go. You can go write your own novel where the aliens win. Have it all be glorious. We all are now alien-human hybrids, and a part of their social structure, which is sort of insect-like. Oh, some people would, I know some human beings who would consider that a wonderful outcome.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
A lot of them work in Silicon Valley. I mean, they want to replace us with
AI.
Through AI, you know, and that's genocide too, in my view. And you can take your pick. There's a certain faction in the human race that has never really liked the human race. They're called misanthropes, and a lot of them end up in high technology, so they don't have to deal with people. And I wanted the human race to survive and do well, so that we could have Star Trek later, my later novel.
So that's what you're aiming toward is Star
Captain
Trek.
Captain Kirk and Lieutenant Uhura, want to get together.
and you wanna see a Federation of United Planets, I guess then.
Well,
the national.
It would be nice that if something like that occurred and the human race was one of the chief instigators. And I don't want to talk about how the novel ends. I'll just say the war ends with a final big battle or series of battles.
And the new national anthem becomes Kumbaya, right?
No.
Can you get the book everywhere, John? Is it mostly online?
Yeah, Amazon.com, and I'm currently breaking up the first novel into three parts because people have complained it's too long and the print is too small.
So is it going to be three
it
separate
up into three
books?
Parts, and I'm going to break up the second novel into two parts so that it's easier to read, because some people say that.
So is it going to be separate books or just sections in the book?
No, they'll be separate books. They'll be.
Oh, so your
book,
series
the
will
first
be.
The book will be broken up into three parts. The collapse of the UFO cover-up, it'll be broken up into a part one called Event Horizon, and part two is called Nightmare in Dreamland, and the part three is called Doomsday.
So you'll have like six books in the trilogy.
Well, they're parts of, the first book was supposed to be War and Peace, and people have called it that. It is a long book about the human race colliding with the cosmos, the intelligent cosmos. And I took, it's a what-if scenario, but I took as much of the folklore of from ufology as I could and tried to interpret it as an intelligent scenario. It made sense. Tom Clancy has a great quote. He said he was asked the difference between science fiction and real life, and he said, science fiction needs to make sense.
I have another question from Phil, and Phil is in Atlanta. And Phil says, is it true, or was Victor able to confirm that the Greys have been the ones doing all of the visitations on Earth and the alien abductions, or has Earth been visited by more than just the Greys?
Oh, well, in the UFO folklore, and based on reports from people being hypnotically regressed, which Victor Norgaard basically takes as material to put together a universe, there are many other species visiting us, and some of them are very nice to humans and like us, and some of them are deeply pathological and hate us. Even though they never met us before, they hate everybody else in the universe. And unfortunately, there was the little short gray aliens. They're kind of like the orcs in the Lord of the Rings.
We're coming close to your 1 hour cutoff point for the show today. So
yeah, I do wish I could talk longer, but I have. I have a lot of other pots on the stove, unfortunately.
What else do you want us to know about? What should we have asked you that we haven't covered yet?
Well, I just say that I tried to put together a universe that kind of made sense, but, you know, I've lived long enough that I know that not everything in life will make sense. And, but I did thoroughly enjoy writing this trilogy, I tried to put as much physics, realistic physics. I mean, some of it, you know, it's dealing with fusion energy and advanced space propulsion and gravity modification with EM fields, things that I've actually worked on and presented papers on at scientific conferences. I tried to put all of that in there as much as I could, and I tried to take some of the main reports, kind of the basic reports from ufology, put them in there in a way that kind of made sense. So I tried to write what I think is a realistic possible future for the human race. And I really believe the human race will do well. I believe we will live up to the vision of Star Trek eventually.
You got an 11th hour caller. Do you want to take it?
Yeah. I can't talk long.
Oh, that's okay. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you? Where are you, please?
Oh, this is John again. I just want to be real brief. I'll be in taking that I wanted the aliens to win. I just said that, but I was thinking it wouldn't make a very good movie deal if that was the case.
Oh, well, I imagine the whole thing as a movie or
yeah.
Series of movies. My model for a successful trilogy is Lord of the Rings, and you know, this is kind of, I'm trying to make a kind of cosmic Lord of the Rings, and it also has The Hobbit. That's the asteroid story, which is a little bit more lighthearted and not so dark.
I take this as a lot of it for it, more a very entertaining approach is the way I look at it. I mean, I still wince at the bad strategy of the aliens. I'm reading this thing going, but if I was running them, I would be doing.
the chief alien. One of the chief allies for the human race in this novel, I will admit, is the chief alien on the far side of the moon.
I mean, he makes Hitler look like a military genius.
Disastrous decision. And executes anyone who disagrees with him. And he's a lot like Adolf Hitler in World War II, who, you know, Hitler made a lot of mistakes. And so did Stalin, especially initially. This is a lot like the Russians in Afghanistan, or when the Russians invaded Finland, and everybody thought it would be a walkover that they'd crush the Finns. This was at the beginning of World War II. You know, that people's expectations and then what really happens can actually be vastly different things.
Yeah. Well, one last thing I'll mention. I always like Carr's comment about why the Greys were failing. Says the cow mounts the bull.
I thought I would throw that in there as a kind of a, you know, to give you some insight into the Samar culture, which is, you know, pretty earthy. And, you know, the cow has mounted the bull at Sarah, and that's his comment, which means it's a complete snafu. It's FUBAR.
Yeah.
That is the Samar version of the acronym FUBAR. The cow is mounted the bull.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'll finish up the book series. So.
Thank you, John. Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Any other concluding comments that you want to offer us, or pearls of wisdom or warnings?
Hey, buy this book. It's about the human possible human future.
Buy
this book.
Any warnings that it's about to come true?
Well, this is a book for adults. This is definitely adult fiction. A lot of stuff happens. It's a war zone. It's a tale from a war zone. But it's a war. The human race didn't go out and start a war with the Greys, for heaven's sake. They came here. You know, we didn't ask them to come here.
Okay. Well, when you have your sequels done, we will resume.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm already working on a sequel.
We'll resume the discussion with Victor.
Like about 30 years later in the future.
Okay. And we hope Victor settles in and enjoys Hollywood.
I'm already settling in, and I am enjoying Hollywood.
Better than Wisconsin,
Wait till the movie. Wait till the movie of Morningstar Pass.
How long do we have to wait for that?
Oh, only a year and a half, I suppose. I don't know.
Well, keep us posted.
I'll be an optimist and say it's going to happen soon.
Keep us posted, and I book up fast, so for my cameo role, I need an advanced date.
I will keep that very much in mind.
John, thank you very much, and
thank you so much. It's an honor to have to be on your show.
And listeners, I'll put the Amazon links for the books and for all of his books on the website.
And don't be part of a cow mounting the bull situation.
I'll leave that to you. listeners, that's it. And we thank John Brandenburg, i.e. Victor Norgaard, for being with us today. For those of you who called, John Hunt, and those of you who sent in emails. And remember, on Sunday, Dennis Wingo interviews Dr. Space, 12 noon California time. Everybody have a great weekend coming up.
A great weekend.
And keep looking up, because, you know, there may be another gray wave invasion coming down to Earth. Who knows?
Surrender. Resistance is futile.
Thank you very much, John. And again, everybody, have a great weekend. And really, keep looking up. Now it's probably more important than ever.
Right.
Goodbye from John and David and the spaceship.
Thank you, Dr. Space.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody.